It is Thursday, June 13th, 2024, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Matthew Moore.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, the governor has called a special session of the Arkansas legislature.
And her goal is to get us to the 0% tax on productivity, which is our income and our corporate income. So I think her goal is ambitious, and I think it's being wisely pursued.
Plus, Olympians are training in the Ozarks.
We have been here now for almost 2 years, and we're just seeing more and more activity from our athletes here in town. They love being in Northwest Arkansas, and our athletes at the highest level of the sport are getting the best results we've ever seen from Americans at the World Cup and the World Championships.
And Chamber Music of the Ozarks plans for expansion.
Typically, the festival opens with a big festival fanfare that we're currently looking for where that's going to happen in downtown Fayetteville. We're very excited about that.
All that after the latest headlines from NPR.
The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society's 26th season of the Summer Jazz Concert Series presents the Ted Ludwig Quartet, featuring Pat Bianchi, Paul Carr, and Stephen Pruitt, Saturday, June 15th at 7:30 p.m. at Walton Arts Center. Tickets and information available at digjazz.com/events.
This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 13th, 2024. I'm Matthew Moore. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. Ahead today, Olympic mountain bikers are training in the Ozarks. We'll have more details on that in about 8 minutes. On Tuesday, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders called a special session of the Arkansas legislature. Andrew Collins is a state representative from Little Rock and the House Minority Leader. He says calling the special session doesn't come as a surprise.
No, I think we knew this was coming after we failed to pass a game and fish appropriation at the end of the last fiscal session. We knew we would have to come back in here before July 1st to get that done.
The last time a session ended without a state agency getting properly funded was in 2003 under Governor Mike Huckabee. Funding was held up for the Department of Human Services and the Department of Corrections when Republican senators used procedural rules to block consideration of a tobacco tax increase that the governor was proposing. This time around, it was just the one agency impacted.
There were a group of legislators who had issues with the appropriation. I think that the main sticking point was the salary for the director.
Representative Collins says there were other issues that members had with the appropriation, but the director's salary was a prominent one. Currently, the salary cap for the director of the Game and Fish Commission is just over $152,000. The new appropriation would have capped the salary at $190,000. Joshua Bryant is a Republican state senator from Rogers. He says he thinks a lot of members were concerned that the process to make those changes for Game and Fish were rushed.
And then, of course, you know, you got 100 members of the House, and to get 75 of them to agree is always quite a feat, especially when talking about, you know, issues that are important to certain geographical areas.
Senator Bryant says while Northwest Arkansas certainly has its hunting and fishing culture, the Arkansas Delta works very closely with the Game and Fish Commission.
They expect Arkansas Game and Fish to comply with their asks that come out of that constituency base. And so whenever issues and topics that are sensitive and close to those members ruffle their feathers, they rightfully so need to make a stand. So I think in this case, it was more about the politics and the people.
The bill only got 62 yes votes on the May 9th version of it and never got a vote after the final amendments were added.
While unfortunate, I think it proves a point to our agencies and to our executive branch that the legislature still controls the power of the purse and we will use it where and when appropriate.
Do you worry that the principle of showing that power and authority can be a bit undermined because calling a special session cost quite a bit of money and you could have very well have just made the appropriation and saved Arkansas taxpayers dollars by not having to call a special session in June?
There's always that argument. I think what our team needs to realize is we've got the Arkansas Legislative Council, which happens obviously next week. So we're already going to have 60 plus members of the legislature already on their way to Little Rock. And so, you know, the ask to bring everybody in, while not normally necessary, they did it in a manner of which reduces that, to the best they can, the burden to the people.
The cost of a special legislative session is typically around $100,000 at a minimum, according to one legislator. In addition to the game and fish work, Governor Sanders has called for the legislature to cut taxes. On social media on Tuesday, the governor said, quote, "I'm calling a special session to give Arkansans hurting from Bidenflation income and property tax relief. We will cut income taxes by nearly $500 million and property taxes by nearly $50 million. Representative Collins doesn't dispute that inflation is an issue that Arkansans are concerned with.
People are feeling like their dollars are not going as far as they would like them to go. And so I'm sympathetic in a sense to that. Now, using it as a political cudgel, I just think is pretty self-explanatory, and that doesn't really merit any more comment. The substance of it is this. There are people in our state who are hurting right now and could use some relief. The form of that relief is really where I differ, and I think many Democrats differ from the governor in this proposal. You know, are you really helping people who need help with this proposal? I would say you're not really doing as good of a job as we could do to help people in the state.
Senator Bryant says cutting taxes is something Governor Sanders ran on in her campaign.
And her goal is to get us to 0% tax on productivity, which is our income and our corporate income. So I think her goal is ambitious, and I think it's being wisely pursued in the sense that she's not taking the surplus and spending it. She's taking the surplus and requesting that we hold it in reserve to be able to address any future years of shortfalls. And so I think we've seen with the way the inflation is going, and that our sales tax revenue is basically filling our coffers, and to give it back to the people is wise. The programs that we do have are funded, and so I think this is the best use for it.
Representative Collins says he's not opposed to it. He just wants to make sure it goes to those who would benefit most from the tax cuts.
People who, you know, are in need of it and frankly, who aren't already wealthy is possibly a good use for it. But I would say, look, there are a lot of other things that we need to be doing better as a state. Everybody, I think, would like to pay less in taxes and yet have a functioning, thriving state. And I think there's a recognition about among many of the people I represent, of course, not all, but many of the people I represent recognize that investment in public schools, in reducing crime, in these things makes a difference. We're all connected. And so your interest is not just narrow. It's not just your own bottom line necessarily, because what happens to your neighbor matters too. So, you know, sure, we'd all like to pay less in taxes. We all like to get more out of services, but you have to recognize there's a tension there. And I think many of the people I represent do recognize that, and they're willing to maybe get a little bit less in the way of a tax break if it means better outcomes for the state as a whole.
The items the legislature plans to consider include lowering the top individual income tax rate from 4.4% to 3.9%, cutting the top corporate income tax rate from 4.8% to 4.3%, and increasing the homestead tax credit from $425 to $500. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore. The 2024 Olympics in Paris begins later this summer, and Northwest Arkansans can look forward to cheering on some athletes who have honed their skills right here in the Ozarks. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth has more.
On Tuesday morning, USA Cycling President and CEO Brendan Quirk made his way to a lectern in the sun-drenched top floor of the Ledger building in downtown Bentonville. Flanked by red, white, and blue balloons, Quirk announced the athletes who will represent Team USA mountain biking at the Paris Olympics next month.
Brendan Quirk, USA Cycling.
It's always great to be in Bentonville.
For the women, the team includes Haley Batten of Park City, Utah, and Savila Blanc from Inverness, California, while Christopher Blevins and Riley Amos, both from Durango, Colorado, make up the men's team. This is the first Olympics for Blanc and Amos. Batten and Blevins both competed in the 2020 Tokyo Games.
The events are on the Olympics are on July 28th and 29th, and we're hopeful for some good results, maybe some medals there.
Quirk says this is the first time the U.S. has had a full team, two men and two women, enter the mountain bike event since it was introduced back in 1996. And he attributes some of that to the dedicated office for mountain biking that USA Cycling opened in Bentonville back in 2022.
We have been here now for almost 2 years, and we're just seeing more and more activity from our athletes here in town. They love being in Northwest Arkansas, and our athletes at the highest level of the sport are getting the best results we've ever seen from Americans at the World Cup and the World Championships. But what we're also seeing is higher and higher participation, junior levels, under 23 levels. So you definitely measure success in terms of junior participation as well. Northwest Arkansas is one of the hotbeds of junior mountain biking. And got a lot to be proud of here.
He says the more than 250 miles of off-road trails plus Arkansas's climate make this region a perfect fit for elite mountain bikers.
The one thing is you can ride year-round here. You go to Crested Butte, you go to Park City, your riding season's 6 months, 7 months long because of the snow. The other thing is the availability of more entry-level and intermediate-level trails here. You're not going to go and be terrified on every ride you're on because of the rock gardens or the roots or the elevation or what have you. You can really progress as an athlete in Northwest Arkansas because of the diversity of terrain.
And Bentonville is eager to capitalize on that status as a home for world-class mountain biking. Kayleen Griffith is the CEO of Visit Bentonville and says the investment the city has put into trails and recreation is starting to pay off.
It's exciting for us as a community to kind of highlight that our trails are that expert of a level for the USA Cycling team. It's really exciting, though, for us to continue to support the mountain biking industry, the mountain bike riders, because we want to see this sport grow, and we also want to see USA grow from that. But I do think Bentonville continues. We want to stay on at the front of mind as a destination for cycling, and this gives us national and international exposure for people to be riding in Bentonville.
And Quirk says he's optimistic that the 2024 team will bring home the country's first Olympic medal in mountain biking.
Historically speaking, the biggest competition, the Swiss are really, really strong. For example, in the Paris Olympics, they went 1-2-3 in the women's race. It's more specific athletes than specific nations. But honestly, I think the other countries are now looking at us, and they're the ones who are nervous about us. So I'm really optimistic about what we're going to see.
Riders will face off on the course at Elincourt Hill outside of Paris on July 28th and 29th. And Griffith says locals can get in on the action with watch parties. They'll have details about that for both events hosted by Visit Bentonville.
I think it's exciting for us because we're going to know these people. I've gotten to meet each of those riders. So it's kind of exciting that I'm going to get to watch them because I'm going to personally have a connection with them.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
Staying in Bentonville, the Bentonville Film Festival continues through the weekend. It's the 10th year for the festival that promotes underrepresented voices in all facets of entertainment and media. Along with scores of film screenings, there are also workshops and panels. Tuesday, the panel, The Power of Women Investing in Women, explored what it can take to navigate the male-dominated world of film. One of the panelists, Fazia Mirza, writes and directs films. Her movie, The Queen of My Dreams, screened at the Momentary last night. During Tuesday's panel, she recounted her unconventional path to writing and directing and how she is determined to make sure underrepresented filmmakers have a path too.
I definitely had a circuitous path to being here. I went to Chicago for law school. You know, my parents wanted me to have an education, and you know, I loved doing theater. And when I was in high school, and I was in, you know, I played instruments, and I was on the speech team. But it was time to do something serious, you know. And so I did law school. I practiced law for almost 3 years, but it was actually, you know, I started taking acting classes again while I was in Chicago, and that was the thing that really sparked me, much to the chagrin of my parents. And so the whole time I was a lawyer, I was lawyering by day and taking acting and comedy classes at night. I know, it sounds really sexy, but my first role was playing Cobweb in Midsummer Night's Dream. And if you know the play, Cobweb has three lines, and one of them is saying Cobweb. So, you know, it wasn't glamorous. And so that was the first time I had to come out, was actually as an actor to my family. They were not pleased. And so I did that because I was following my heart, but I, you know, after auditioning in Chicago and trying to find roles, it became very clear to me very quickly that there weren't that many, you know, as a queer Muslim brown person, not one of those identities I was told I fit. You know, much less all of them. So I started writing, and I didn't know how to write, but, you know, I didn't know how to be a lawyer either, and I did that. So really the idea of just not being afraid to do a thing you've never done before was really the thing I learned from law school and being a lawyer, because you are truly just thrown into everything, every case, every moment, having a job, you know. And so I started writing, and I cast myself. I cast all these incredible other actors in Chicago who, you know, were often put in boxes. Like, oh, you do comedy. No, you do drama. No, you're a person of color. You do this kind of role. And so we were just like, let's just play. And I had no funding, no money. And, you know, I was deeply inspired by, you know, Issa Rae had her web series, Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, at the time. And she was really doing that on her own. Like, her first episode, it was like, I put the camera here, and then I put the camera here, you know, and she's not a camera person. And so I started making my work, and eventually, you know, I made short films, I made web series, I made a feature film called Signature Move that was at South by Southwest in 2017. And it wasn't until I moved to LA to write for television that I sort of thought about this path as a director. Because really, you know, I found myself really unhappy as an actor, and also, like, still, I was like, where is the power? You know, and part of why I hadn't stepped into directing previously is I thought that was for powerful patriarchy, right? It was for the patriarchy, and it was not for someone who looked like me. Like, you had to know the language of cameras and technical stuff, and how could I possibly? And then, you know, through lots of conversations like this one, and through just diving in, through my incredible wife and producer and champion, Andrea Wilson-Mirza's encouragement, I point there because she's sitting there, I decided to direct the feature that's here at the festival. And it literally changed my life. I suddenly felt grounded in who I am. And I was like, oh, because I was looking for someone to tell my story. And everyone's like, what about you? And I was like, oh. And so, you know, I think that that is something that is truly the power for all of us. You know, we don't have to wait for someone else to do it, even if we don't know how. We are the power. It is within us. And so how do we harness essentially ourselves? And that is kind of, I think, the strongest way forward. If we're all harnessing ourselves, I mean, we can really do anything.
Fazia Mirza is a director and writer. Her movie, The Queen of My Dreams, was shown this week at the Bentonville Film Festival. Her comments came from the panel, The Power of Women Investing in Women at This Week's Festival. We'll hear more excerpts from panels at the festival through this week and next on Ozarks at Large.
Time now for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. Arkansas dropped from 43rd to 45th in child well-being among the 50 states. That was reported this week by the Annie E. Casey Foundation Kids Count data book. The state saw significant declines in economic well-being, down 6 spots, and health, down 5 places, compared with last year. Additionally, 8th grade math proficiency scores fell sharply from 2019 to 2022. The Annie E. Casey Foundation is a private philanthropic organization that seeks to improve children's futures. Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families is its Arkansas-based partner. We have a lot more on the foundation's latest Kids Count data book online. And you can find that story over on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. We've got more news after the break on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
On a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics, Roby Brock spoke with Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration Secretary Jim Hudson to discuss the state budget surplus and economic conditions. Here is a portion of that conversation.
Why do you think the Arkansas economy has been so resilient?
Well, I do think part of the story are the tax cuts that we've had here the past several years. I think it clearly is stimulating the economy to a large extent. I think Arkansas is one of those states that doesn't run too hot and it doesn't run too cold. I think we make responsible decisions both in government and in business, and I think that lets the flywheel keep turning. So I think the economy in Arkansas is still very strong here.
When you see just those tax cuts and how they turn back over into the economy, do you see that strength in income tax collections, sales tax collections? I mean, it has been a pretty broad-based, strong revenue report.
It has. So I think you see it first, you know, really in the income tax area, both in corporate and individual income. So people take that money, they get back, and then they're able to reinvest it in the economy, both from a corporate perspective, but from an individual perspective. So you think about, for somebody who's making $50,000 a year, a couple of $50,000 income, they're getting back about $460 a year from the tax cuts we've passed. That's a car payment right there.
Yeah.
So they can take that money and they can go buy things with it and, you know, make their lifestyle a little bit better.
Yeah, and when they're making millions like you, it's even bigger and better, isn't it? I'm just kidding.
You should really go back and work on your math.
You're right. Hopefully you can speak to this. I have heard from Speaker Shepard, Senate President Hester, that they are looking at anywhere between a 0.2% and 0.5% income tax cut on the personal income tax side. Has anything been decided on that? What do you feel is the sweet spot on that?
Well, nothing's been decided, you know, in terms of future revenue, you know, tax cuts. I think the governor's committed. She's made that very clear all along, that she wants to drive to a zero, you know, income tax rate, and we need to continue to make progress on that in a responsible fashion. I know that she's had good, constructive dialogue with leadership about what next steps could look like. I would just say stay tuned.
We'll stay tuned. I'm sure it'll get thrown out there. Somebody's going to talk about it before it gets on the call for the special session, I predict. So I was just giving you a chance to be that guy.
I let the governor make news. I don't make news.
All right. Well, let's talk about the fact some people will say that these tax cuts, while they are potentially spawning this economic activity, we could also be investing that money in infrastructure. We could be investing it in stronger pre-K programs, prisons. There are a lot of places where the services that the state provides. I don't know if you get into the philosophy of that, but I mean, are those arguments, do you think they have merit?
No, those are arguments, but I don't think they have merit. You know, if you look at it from a prison perspective, you know, we've already set aside a significant amount of money for the construction of a new prison. If more is ever needed, we'll be able, I think, to take care of that. We're already making significant investments in education. You think about pre-K, I hear that, you know, national rankings would say that Arkansas is in the top 10 in terms of the number of three-year-olds who are in pre-K and the amount of government spending for that that age group. So I don't think we're, you know, not taking care of that part of the population. I think at the end of the day, we have a budget, and the budget establishes the priorities for the state of Arkansas. Once we've fully funded our priorities, I think the first claim of any money that's left over is to the taxpayer.
Yeah,
it's their money, then we need to give it back to them.
Well, an area that did not get more money in this last budget process was higher education. I think there's actually a cut in higher education there. I mean, should we not have been investing more in higher education?
Well, higher education, we just applied the formula funding to that higher education institutions had agreed to themselves. And so for those institutions that the productivity formula didn't warrant additional funding, but maybe reduced funding, we just applied that formula as is. Higher education is incredibly expensive. I think, there's ongoing national conversations about that. To the extent there's any changes to the higher education formula, that'll be coming probably at a later date.
Yeah. We got about a minute and a half left. Yep. I want to talk to you about there is a public hearing on Friday that is discussing this issue of gender recognition on driver's licenses. You're following state law. You are establishing a rule that is going to put the state law into the proper promulgated area that it needs to be. But there is a public hearing on this. Everybody's going to get a chance to vent and say what they want to say. Is it going to change anything, I think, is my question. What's the point of having the public hearing if it's pretty clear you have to do this to follow state law? Yeah. What are you going to get out of that public commentary?
The public input is the main product of that. So when we go back to the General Assembly with our permanent rule, we will present to the General Assembly, here's all the public comment that we received. And the General Assembly gets to take that into account as it considers whether or not it will pass our rule. We do think the rule that we're promulgating is consistent with state law and really just reestablishes what was state law before the Department of Finance Administration changed it without going through the rulemaking process several years ago.
Right. You think it'll be influential in terms of what you receive in public comment, that it will change a lawmaker's opinion about something or just reinforce their position of what they've already done?
Yeah, can't say that. I think anytime a citizen has an opportunity to speak up about where policy is changing, that's important, and we'll listen to it.
That is Jim Hudson, Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration Secretary. He appeared on a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock. You can watch that entire interview at talkbusiness.net. In other news this week, Governor Sarah Sanders announced Tuesday that she will call a special session next week for at least two purposes, tax cuts and a Game and Fish Commission budget. The under-construction Heartland Whole Health Institute in Bentonville has hired a chief medical officer. John Finley was most recently the president of Bryan Health Connect in Lincoln, Nebraska. And the inaugural Fort Smith Food Truck Festival is approaching. So far, nearly a dozen food trucks have signed on for the event, which will be from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday, June 22nd in the First National Bank parking lot at 601 Garrison Avenue in downtown Fort Smith. For more news, visit us online at nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can follow our reporting each and every day. I'm Paul Gatling, and that's the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The annual Chamber Music on the Mountain concerts are this weekend, both taking place on Mount Sequoia. And there's big news this week about the future of Chamber Music of the Ozarks as the organization prepares for a major expansion in summer 2025. Tomoko Kashiwagi, the artistic director for Chamber Music of the Ozarks, and Brittany Cooper Dorsey, the current executive director of the Memphis Youth Symphony Program, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio yesterday afternoon to discuss what will be the launch of the Ozark Music Initiative. Cooper Dorsey, moving forward, will be the executive director of the Ozark Music Initiative. For several years, she's been a board member of the Hot Springs Music Festival, an annual gathering of young musicians and mentors that has been dormant since the pandemic. She says the new Fayetteville-based festival will take great inspiration from that Hot Springs event.
The board of directors is interested in finding a new location because we didn't feel like Hot Springs, Arkansas had the means to support a music festival. It's been there for 25 years and has had national recognition. But there's something magical about having this festival in a mountain town. And of course, we need somewhere that is going to support the arts. And I think that, you know, Fayetteville is that type of place. So I came to scout some things out. We talked about, I'm from Jasper, Arkansas, so I'm kind of returning to my Ozark Mountain roots. And a friend of mine said, I know you need to meet with Tomoko. She is running the chamber music of the Ozarks, and she would be a great person to talk to. So we had cocktails and started chatting. I learned that she didn't have her own 501c3 status, and so I said, what would you think about joining forces and continuing what you do and doing more, and, you know, us working together. And we both hit it off immediately, fast friends, and we decided to see if we could give this thing a try. And here we are, officially having announced yesterday that we are starting a new nonprofit.
All right, Tomoko, let me ask you about this, because you and I have talked, you know, this time of year for like the last 3 or 4 years. And I know how you love sharing music with people, and you love the community that musicians can bring. But at times, you would really be busy. So what was it that told you, yeah, we can do this and we can make it bigger and it's going to work?
I think one unique, well, interesting fact is that I was almost at Hot Springs Music Festival. I signed the contract as a faculty mentor for the summer of 2020. I didn't get to go. So I knew of the festival. It's not just the orchestra festival. It's not just a orchestra festival. The faculty mentors and the students actually also do chamber music. So I was really looking forward to being a part of that. I signed the contract, COVID. I signed the contract again for 2021, again canceled. So when this came, when I was introduced to Brittany, I was like, it was meant to be. I am excited. I also play in Symphony of Northwest Arkansas. I love being a part of a larger ensemble, and especially when there's chamber music that's already incorporated, it's like no-brainer. And when we started talking, it wasn't just about this summer festival that we just announced that's going to happen in a year from now, but with the Ozark Music Initiative, what we're going to do during the academic year or school year, whichever you want to say, is that I'm going to do more chamber music education. So we already started a kind of mentoring some high school students they formed a quintet together, and they were just looking for a way to share their love for chamber music with the community. And I was introduced to one of the members, and next thing we know, I took them to Butterfield Trail Village, and they had a concert 2 weeks ago. And I get emails from, well, both the performer and the residents who heard a concert saying, when's the next concert? So there's already an interest. There's a good energy. So it just made sense. Everything made sense. The only thing that I still, pinch myself is like, well, is this really happening? Is this more work? Probably, but I really do think that the work that we do is making a difference. I feel the difference, and I think the community members are going to really see a difference in what we can bring to Northwest Arkansas.
Summer of 2025, mm-hmm. A year from now, what will be taking place for the musicians, for the students, the young people, and what will be available for those of us who want to listen?
Yeah, so we're hoping to keep it a similar model to what Hot Springs Music Festival was. So I'll give you a sense of what that was. It's a 2-week festival where we invite professional musicians who are typically members of major symphony orchestras to come and work with talented college students who come from all over the country to Fayetteville. We'll have them all stay here for 2 weeks, and they will be rehearsing together and putting on performances. Typically, the festival opens with a big festival fanfare that we're currently looking for where that's going to happen in downtown Fayetteville. We're very excited about that. And then there will be some concerts that are faculty-led, chamber concerts, very similar to what Tomoko's been doing with Chamber Music of the Ozarks. And then as time goes on and the more rehearsals go underway, the students will, you know, put on a large orchestral concert. We're hoping that those are going to be somewhere like Walton Arts Center. And that will be similar to like the Masterworks concerts that audiences attend to see Sona. But it's giving all these college students orchestral experience and real life what it would feel like to be a professional musician. And that currently, you know, with Hot Springs Music Festival not existing, isn't something that happens here in Arkansas. So it's a really exciting opportunity. And then it also gives the Fayetteville community more high quality concerts to get to go and hear. And during the summer, Sona isn't happening. So there is kind of a need for that. Like, people still want to attend their concerts and see things. I think the most exciting thing about the festival is having performances in spaces that may not typically have performances. So we're looking at, you know, art galleries, churches, even outdoor spaces. I was looking at the Ramble, like, oh, this could be really exciting. So currently we're in the process of planning what all those things will be, but you're going to be looking at almost two full weeks of concerts every single day in June of 2025.
I know the concept is somewhat transferable from what happened for a quarter century in Hot Springs. Are the logistics, do you have some ideas of how it can land, this festival can land in Fayetteville? I mean, by looking at some of what was done in Hot Springs?
Absolutely. There are some things that are going to transfer really beautifully here. There are also some things that have been a challenge in Hot Springs that I think being in Fayetteville is going to be a huge benefit to this festival. Like, for example, having the Walton Arts Center and other large performance spaces, Hot Springs wasn't really lended to that. For years, they were converting an old field house gymnasium to be a concert hall, and audience members were sitting on bleachers. I mean, it was really something. It was very hot and unique, but the acoustics were really amazing in there, which is why they did it. So when I was speaking with the founder of the festival, who's still a dear friend of mine, she said, oh, my goodness, that's going to be such a huge barrier lifted if you were to move to Northwest Arkansas.
How many students are we talking about next summer?
About 100.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What has to happen between now and then?
For most music festivals, and actually college students during the summer, is an opportunity for them to go outside of their usual community, which is whatever university or conservatory that they're attending. And summer festivals become like that first step toward having more networking, more mentorship. So most of the students will be looking into where they might go the following summer, starting in the fall semester. Mm-hmm. So if it's a big festival, there might even be a preliminary audition tape that needs to be sent out, usually by December 1st, which means that the students really need to get learning their repertoire at the beginning of the semester, and they will have a process, application process. As much as we would love to invite everybody who wants to come to our Northwest Arkansas because of the number and the size and different instrumentation, we do have to make it a selective process.
Sure.
So that means there will be application, there will be auditioning process, whether it will be recorded or live. We have to decide on that at some point. And then hopefully by February or March, we can be like, come to Northwest Arkansas. Let's plan on having some music. And then we'll have to figure out who's going to play what.
So logistically, we just launched our website, which is very exciting. It's ozarkmusic.org. And we have logos, which is very exciting. Now we're looking at nailing down our venues for the concerts. We're looking at hiring all of our mentors. Some we want to keep the same from, you know, mentors who are part of Hot Springs Music Festival as well. But things change. It's been years since that festival has happened at full force. So we're going to be looking at finding, I mentioned professional symphony musicians. Some of them also are college professors. We're looking for some of the best musicians in the country, but also really good human beings mm-hmm. and exciting people that students are going to want to work with. So we'll be hiring those folks, and that will be really exciting for us to announce so students can see this is the person that I'm going to get to work with during the summer. So that's kind of the big first thing that we need to do. And then, like Tomoko said, we'll start that application process and get going.
Do you think some of the support will be transferable?
I don't know. Okay. We will see. That is hard. I will say that we've had some really, really wonderful supporters in Hot Springs, and I think some of them may even decide to come to Fayetteville for the festival. I mean, they really love that festival. We are looking at potentially, as things grow and we get support, grant funding and things like that, that perhaps we could do a run-out concert to Hot Springs.
Oh, nice.
Which would be really, really wonderful. I'm not sure that's going to be possible the first year just because we're still starting from the ground up, rebuilding an organization. But eventually, I would really love to see that happen because there are a lot of people there who are really going to miss this festival.
There's still a chance to hear more music this summer.
Yes, I'm glad you asked. So there, we have two more concerts actually at the end of this week. So it's coming right up. One is something that I've been doing with Chamber Music on the Mountain. It's a spotlight concert. I basically do a call out to the community saying, you've been secretly practicing at home or having fun with friends. Why don't you share with the community? So we have a community spotlight concert on Friday at Mount Sequoia. It will be at 6:30. And then on Saturday, this is kind of a new thing. I'm kind of transitioning to what we'll be doing next year, thinking more about education and actually growing and nurturing the musicians, local musicians. So I literally came from a rehearsal that we have in Mount Sequoia. I'm calling it Chamber Music Immersive. We're taking a movement of different chamber music. We have groups, five groups, and we're just enjoying the rehearsal process, which is the whole experience. And then the final product will be on Saturday evening. It's a concert. It's a showcase of what we have done in the week. And hopefully some of the students or the musicians who will be involved will be able to say, this is what made this make this piece unique when we play together, because sometimes we don't get to share that with the audience. So it's not just going to be come and sit and listen to us, but these are the things that matter to us as a performer. We hope you hear it and enjoy it. So
I love that.
So in the past, a lot of what Tomoko has done has been more presenting concerts, and this these couple days, it's college students working with professionals, which will be exactly, you know, what this music festival is going to look like. And it's just, it's really exciting. It's really exciting to see the younger generation, you know, learn from these more experienced musicians and rise to it.
What are the times Friday and Saturday?
Friday will be at 6:30 p.m. and Saturday will be at 7 p.m. both at Miller Lodge in Mount Sequoia.
Well, best of luck. Let's keep us up to date how it's going. And, you know, next summer, let's just be all over this.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Tomoko Kashiwagi is the Artistic Director for Chamber Music of the Ozarks, and Brittany Cooper Dorsey is currently Executive Director of the Memphis Youth Symphony Program, will be the Executive Director for the Ozark Music Initiative that will begin next summer in Fayetteville. You can find details, by the way, about this weekend's concerts on Mount Sequoia at chambermusiconthemountain.org. Our conversation took place yesterday at the Carver Center for Public Radio.
Cinderella!
As far as boxing names go, there are lots of Sugar Rays, plenty of Golden Boys, but only one Cinderella Man. You're on The Sound Beat.
I hear them calling, calling.
Go up and do the attic.
And go down and do the cellar.
You can do them both together, Cinderella.
In the 1920s and 30s, boxing was one of the most popular sports in the country. It and other forms of entertainment provided cheerful moments of respite from the gloom the Depression cast over the nation. In the movies and on radio, the public clamored for heroes like Superman and the Lone Ranger. But in the boxing ring, James Braddock proved himself the real-life equivalent. After some inopportune losses and injuries, his career floundered, until a winning streak put him in the ring with Max Baer, the heavyweight champion of the world, on June 13, 1935. If you haven't seen Ron Howard's film, spoiler alert, he wins. You've been listening to the Fontaine Sisters with the Cinderella Work Song.
Day it's Cinderella.
Light the fire, fix the breakfast, wash the dishes, do the mopping,
and the cleaning, and the dusting.
Want to see that championship bout? We've got it at soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
Tomorrow on Ozarks, we'll check with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics, hear more from the Bentonville Film Festival, and get ready for the weekend with Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large.
This is Leah Uribe, Professor of Music and Associate Dean at the University of Arkansas Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. We open Sound Perimeter today with Johann Sebastian Bach's Violin Concerto in A Minor, First Movement, interpreted by Julia Fischer and the Baltic Sea Youth Philharmonic under the direction of Christian Jarvi. When I was about 14 years old, I was introduced to this piece in a music history class at my local conservatory, where I was a pre-college student being trained to be a musician. During those formative years, I was deeply captivated by classical music and the sound of the violin, and this piece, with its perfect blend of technical mastery and emotional depth, significantly impacted my young years. Let us continue listening to this excerpt's energetic and intricate interplay between the solo violin and the orchestra. That was Julia Fischer and the Baltic Sea Youth Philharmonic under the direction of Christian Jarvi performing an excerpt from Johann Sebastian Bach's Violin Concerto in A Minor, First Movement, from a 2014 live recording. The violin, with its rich history and expressive range, is one of the most versatile instruments in the world of music, able to convey the deepest of human emotions and the most intricate of musical ideas. Let us explore another take on the instrument, this time by Jennifer Higdon's Pulitzer Prize-winning Violin Concerto, performed by American violinist Benjamin Billman with the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Robert Spano.
This excerpt of the third movement, entitled Fly Forward, is a breathtaking display of virtuosity and energy. This movement captures a sense of relentless momentum and exhilaration, with the solo violin soaring through rapid, intricate passages that evoke a feeling of flight. That was violinist Benjamin Billman with the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Robert Spano, interpreting an excerpt from Jennifer Higdon's Violin Concerto, third movement, entitled Fly Forward. Training traditional music programs, I learned extensively about the master composers and their masterpieces in the classical music canon. However, it wasn't until I became a professional musician that I discovered women and other non-dominant identity composers and their equally impactful, beautiful, and transcendental works. Unfortunately, many of their contributions had to be included in the music history books. Adding these pieces and names to the classical music canon is not just necessary and just. It enriches our opportunities to experience beauty and artistic excellence. I invite you to find out more about today's music in our program notes. We end Sound Penimeter today with another piece for the violin featuring composer and violinist Jalen Black, Bass Heavy, performed live at the Berklee College of Music in 2019. This is Leah Uribe, Professor of Music and Associate Dean at the University of Arkansas Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Penimeter. Sound Penimeter is a show written, hosted by me, and produced by Sophia Nurani, KUAF 91.3 in Fayetteville, Arkansas. This segment is dedicated to diverse voices in and around music. I hope it will expand your knowledge and connection to inclusive sounds, and let music infiltrate your lives and transform your realities. Have a great day.
Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville. Contributors to today's show included Daniel Carruth, Paul Gatling, Roby Brock, and Leah Uribe. Additional help today came from Stephanie Brock, Sophia Narani, and Jasper Logan.
Matthew produced today's show inside the Bruce and Ann Applegate News Studio 2. We're going to be saying bye to Paul Gatling at the end of this
month. Yeah, it's going to be a different feel without hearing that intro on Thursdays.
Yeah, well, but... I talked to Roby Brock, who is kind of his overall boss and talk business politics. He says, great step up for Paul. He'll miss him, but, you know.
We'll miss you, but congratulations.
Exactly. We'll not miss you because we'll be back tomorrow. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Matthew Moore.
KUAF is supported by Butterfield Trail Village, a premier Northwest Arkansas retirement community catering to active lifestyles and resident well-being, offering a variety of activities and living options from apartments to village homes, plus outdoor spaces, including access to city trails. ButterfieldTrailVillage.org for more.